You're listening to the Prepared Homestead Podcast, equipping you to build a self-sufficient homestead in uncertain times.
We're your hosts, Sean and Monica Mitzel, coming to you from Sovereign Sunrise Permafarm in the mountains of northern Idaho. We're glad you're with us.
On today's podcast, Monica and I sit down with Dan McDonald, who is running for local office here in Bonner County, Idaho. He's running for a county commissioner. And the reason we think that this podcast is really important is because we believe that local politics is where we need to spend the majority of our time if we're going to be involved in politics, not at the national level, at the local level primarily. We're not saying don't vote and be involved in on the national scene, but the local scene is much more important to us. I think that the next election for county sheriff, for your county commissioner, for your state representative is much more important than the presidential election. And we know that a lot of people who listen to this podcast are not from Bonner County, Idaho. But what you should get out of this podcast is the importance of that being involved locally. So again, we sit down with Dan McDonald, and he is a host on our local radio show here called Face to Face. So he co-hosts as the conservative voice of that show, and that has provided Dan the opportunity to hear and discuss the concerns, needs, and frustrations of Bonner County residents. So again, think of that at your own local level and how that would apply to you. So this is a very important podcast. Dan is also a roofing consultant, and he feels that this experience will provide a valuable tool at the county level. So he understands project and project planning, and maintaining a timeline and a budget is critical. So he wants to be able to apply that to the county level, which would be very valuable. So he has extensive business background and experience in both managing budgets and personnel. So he is also involved locally with charities and has a great interest in local government, obviously. He is a husband, a father, and a grandfather. He is very conservative. He calls himself a patriot first, then a conservative, then a Republican. So he wants to maintain and be active and paying attention to government at all levels, and he expects the citizens to let him know what is on their mind. So he's going to break down some of these things for us, and we have a really good discussion on some of the important topics that affect us here locally, and then also some national topics as well, and kind of his philosophy on government. So let's get to the interview. All right. Well, Dan, thanks for being with us and taking the time out of your busy schedule.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. What we want to do is start by just having you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be interested in politics and local politics in particular.
Well, I've always been interested in politics. In fact, my grandmother years ago said, you know, you should go run for political office. And this is when I was quite a bit younger, and I was like, really, political office? Who wants to do that? And so that's always been in the back of my mind. But I've always been politically involved at one level or another, never as involved as I am now. And then once I started doing the radio show, it really forced me to get in tune with what was going on. So it forced me to read a lot. I had to do a lot of research, because you never want to come off as thinking you know something and not actually knowing the nuts and bolts of the right. issue. So that's really what kind of drove me this direction.
Okay.
And then once I became pretty well known for my radio show, people started saying, hey, listen, you should run for office.
Okay.
I've got a great career right now with a job that pays really well, and I call my own hours. So this is really a step down as far as pay goes, but it's a step up as far as my passion goes.
Okay, got it. So you're not doing it for fame and fortune, obviously.
No, and I think that's one of the problems we have with a lot of politicians. You always wonder what their motivation is. Why are you running for office?
Right.
Is it for your own glorification, or is it to do the job the right way? Because
okay.
there are, and especially with county commissioners, you'll see people that either have a project they want to get off the ground, a land project, or a friend has a project they want to get off the ground, or they are trying to pad their resume to run for higher office. Mm-hmm. And those are two bad reasons to run for public
yeah.
office.
Yeah,
and I have neither one of those. I don't really want to go to Boise. I like where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
My job right now, I drive about 55,000 miles a year, so I'm ready to stop driving that much and I want to stay in Bonner County.
Okay, awesome. So I mean, you're obviously running for county commissioner in Bonner County. Who's Dan McDonald? Tell us about yourself, your family. You know, so if somebody is looking at Bonner County, like, okay, so who's this guy?
Well, the political side, I would say that I'm a patriot first, conservative second, Republican third. Probably a distant third.
That sounds good. Distant third.
Okay. On the personal side, I'm a grandpa. I have four grandkids, and I love it. I mean, if I could have had grandkids first instead of having my own kids and then had kids later, then it would be fantastic. But I have a passion for everything I do. I like to fish. I like to hunt. There's a lot of things I do. I like to garden. A lot of my buddies give me a hard time, but I just dig it. My grandfather taught me how to garden when I was a kid. And before he passed away, we had a kind of a co-op garden between the two of us. So that's one of my other passions. But I'm the guy you see every day. I mean, okay. I'm just a working guy. I have a Harley. I like to ride, you know, and when my wife and I can get away, we don't have the grandkids. So I'm just, you know, what you see is what you get.
Sounds good.
That's awesome.
Hey, we obviously homestead a lot here, and a lot of our audience is homesteaders. So tell us a little bit about your garden.
Well, we live out on Sunnyside, so we've got a great garden spot. Good full sun. Had to put fences up because we have deer and elk out there that don't seem to respect the fact that I'm, you know, trying to grow something here.
They probably appreciate it, actually.
Oh, actually, they do. In fact, the first couple of years I had it out, the space we had it in, it was like, hey, awesome, smorgasbord. I grow everything organic. I'm always concerned about what I, you know, what we put in our bodies. Plus, I give a lot of food to our kids and grandkids, and so I want to make sure they're getting the right kind of food. But I grow a mixed bag of everything. I mean, you name it, tomatoes, squash, broccoli, kale. By the way, kale can grow on a concrete driveway. When I first time I grew kale, I thought, man, you just can't offend this stuff. I drag hoses over it, but I had to create for the garden. I had to create another water source, so I got a big rototank, a 1600 gallon rototank to have for storage. Plus, it lets the water warm up, and it's always nice to water with warmer water because ours typically comes out of a well that's 400 feet deep. So I'm real conscious about everything you do with the garden. Plus, it's where I do my therapy. When I come home from being on the road all day long and I need to unwind, man, I go out, I come home, change the shorts and a tank top, my boots, and I go out and I just play in the garden.
Cool.
That's great. So, okay, you're running for county commissioner. Tell us exactly what is the role of a county commissioner. A lot of people aren't really familiar with what that means exactly.
Well, the importance of the job is that the county touches our lives every day more so than the state or the feds do. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an everyday thing. County commissioners in and of themselves are the head administrator for the county. So they are going to handle budgeting for all the different entities, sheriff, road and bridge, EMT, EMS, the whole nine yards. So they play a pivotal role in just trying to decide the direction of the county. They also have the ability to deal with land issues as well. Property rights. I'm a huge fan of property, personal property rights. So they really play this role that's integral to everybody's life every day. To where you may, you know, the state will pass laws and they may or may not touch us. A lot of times they touch us in ways we don't know. The county really does do a lot of things that actually affect us every day.
Yeah. We talk to people all the time and we express the fact that local politics, your county sheriff, your county commissioner, your representative to us is a much more important election, if you will, than the presidential election.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah. I
mean, without a doubt.
Because you're right. It does touch us in many ways. And, you know, whether or not we can build a shed on our property, things like that, is defined really by the county and to some extent.
Which is ridiculous. I built a goat house. We were talking about my goats for the show. I built a goat house. It was a 4x10, and I got a call from the county. You didn't pull a permit for that.
Oh,
I said,
wow.
It's a goat house.
Right.
Yeah.
Is it close to the property line? No. You know, I mean, it was like, I can't believe we're having this discussion.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I agree with you on that 100%.
Yeah.
I want to shift gears here just real quick.
Sure.
Now, you're running as a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, what do you say to those, including us,
okay,
because that's definitely us, who have basically given up on the Republican Party? For basically failing to stick to their platform and their principles, you know, I'll give you an example. This is on the national scale. You'll hear them quoting Jefferson here and there. Yet, when it comes to life, liberty, and property, although I'm diametrically opposed to the Democrats, it seems to be no difference with the Republicans.
And to me, there's two Republican parties out there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There's the establishment GOP, which is the group you're talking about.
Yes.
That I call them Democrat light.
Yes. Yes.
and when you look at the Democrats, although the Democrats have swung really hard to the left, but when you look at the Democrats and the establishment GOP, they're really the same. The Democrats say, hey, listen, we want your money so that we can run all these programs. And the Republicans in the establishment GOP says, we want your money to run these programs, and we'll run them better.
Right.
When the bottom line is, why are you taking so much of our money?
Right.
So in comes the more liberty-minded movement, and that can include the Tea Party, the Patriots, the more conservative side, with the conservative side that says, hey, listen, we are constitutional conservatives. We look at the Constitution not as a living document, but as a document that actually gives us the ability to run our own lives outside of the government and limits the government.
Sure, like a Scalia.
Right. The other two groups look at the Constitution as, well, this is a great document, and it's a nice guideline, but really we'd like to make some changes if we could.
Sure.
And trust me, if there wasn't the conservative side, and in some cases the Supreme Court stopping him, I think the Constitution would have been gone by now.
Yes. Well, in practice, in many ways it is gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would definitely say that to be...
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
It's at least been dramatically compromised.
Sure.
Well, because a lot of people look at it and say, well, that allows for interpretation.
Right.
And this is my interpretation. Yeah. That's what that meant. And a lot of people don't understand that it's actually intended to hold the government back instead
exactly.
of being used against a person.
And that's the biggest mistake. You talk to a lot of people that, and I give a lot of people the benefit of the doubt. They're busy. They don't have time to actually research this stuff. But they look at the Constitution as guidelines for the government, and really it's guidelines to stop the government.
Right.
It's guidelines for the people.
Right. And that history, that the Constitution as written as opposed to the Constitution as interpreted
mm-hmm.
is important. And
right.
That's kind of what you're getting at there for sure.
Okay, if you could sum up your political philosophy in a minute or so, or more.
In a minute? Okay.
You know, you don't have to keep it down to a minute. What would you say?
I think the opening was, what I said in the opening was, I'm a patriot first. I'm a conservative second. Party means nothing to me other than the fact that you have to be involved in a party to be able to run.
Right.
I like the old Republicans that we don't seem to see a lot of anymore, except here in Bonner County. We're really blessed in Bonner County in that we have a good solid conservative movement.
Sure. Republican in Bonner County is a lot different than Republican
right.
National.
Well, and you know, and Democrat in Bonner County used to be a lot different than what the Democrats are today in Bonner County. When we first moved here, and my wife's got family all around the county, her parents are from here, many of their relatives are Democrats, but they're what I used to call North Idaho Democrats. They're really, really conservative for the most part, but put a D after their name.
Right.
They would vote on many issues the same way we would, on guns and the whole nine yards.
Right.
But there's been a big influx of the other type of Democrats move in, as well as the other type of Republicans, these more established Republicans who think they know best and don't really care for the whole liberty side.
Right.
So tell me how you define patriot.
Oh, that's a great question.
That is a very good question. A patriot is someone who looks at the Constitution and says, you know what, these are the rules that I choose to live by. Country comes first. And when you say country, a lot of people make the mistake of not recognizing that country is the people. We are the country.
Mm-hmm.
The people are the country. The land's the country. And you need to set that aside first. Government to me is a necessary evil that's gotten way overblown.
Okay.
I'm a small government guy. I mean, without a doubt, every interaction I have with government has never been fun or pretty. So,
yeah.
So it seems odd to be running for office, but the other side of that is just going back to the Republican question is that I don't believe that you can make change by stepping out of the party, for instance.
Right.
So if you want to create real change, you have to be involved.
Right.
And it's one of the other reasons I'm involved. You're not going to make that change in D.C. It needs to start here.
Right.
Right. That's one of the reasons why when we moved here. So last summer we were, you know, independent.
Mm-hmm.
We were non-registered Republicans and
couldn't do anything.
Yeah, we had just withdrawn from the Republican Party, and we mm-hmm. did that a long time ago. And being in the military, we're moving from place to place, so it's really hard to get involved in local politics mm-hmm. in any way. So we went to a Republican, Bonner County Republican Women's meeting back in the fall
mm-hmm.
and got talking to a couple people, and she said, well, you know, if you want to do anything, you have to be, you know, registered as a Republican if you want to, you know, have
right.
any influence over who's running and who's going to be part of the platform in order to vote, you know, in the Republican primaries.
Mm-hmm.
We sat there and thought about it and went, well, we looked around and we actually saw a lot of really good Republicans, true
mm-hmm.
Republicans in this area. And so despite our resistance against the Republican Party in general, we decided, you know what, we'd like to be part of this. We'd like to be part of the conservative Republicans that we see here in Bonner County. And so that's what got us registered as Republicans.
Well, and
once
I, and,
again.
I went through that gyration as well, where I was fed up with the party, the direction of the party, the establishment party had gone. And I went through the same gyrations years ago, and finally I realized, listen, I'm not going to be able to make any change unless I'm involved with the party.
Right.
So
right.
Let's get involved with the party, and let's start from the ground up making things happen.
And
so.
we wholeheartedly agree, and it's from the bottom up. It's the grassroots level. It's the highly localized level.
Mm-hmm.
So is that a fair characterization to say that you have a constitutional worldview and that despite things that we would like to see happen, you know, like, for example, we all want to see, you know, all kids eat, get good meals, right? But it doesn't mean that government should provide that.
Exactly. In fact, one of the things, if you start tracking it, you look at charitable giving even up to 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Personal charitable giving was much higher than it is now,
right?
Because government's kind of taken the role of the person.
Yeah.
And I don't think we were ever called to create this big government. And people like to say, well, what would Jesus do? Well, Jesus didn't say, hey, listen, let's go ahead and give a bunch of money to the Romans, let the Romans take care
right.
of the poor.
Right.
He goes, no, you step up as an individual and say, listen, it's my job to take care of the poor.
Absolutely. Right, and when people see that gap,
mm-hmm.
they fill it.
Right.
When they see the government stepping into the gap, they go, oh, okay, well, I don't have to worry about it. There's a program for that.
Right, exactly.
Now, well, have they checked into some food stamps or something?
Right.
Well, and then the government gets to pick and choose who they want to help.
Exactly.
And that's where I have a problem. It's, listen, let's go back to local charities. Let's, you know, let's change the welfare program. And I'm all for helping people that are in need.
Yeah.
In fact, my track record, I've done a lot of charitable things in the county that I hate to wave the flag on the hardest part about campaigning is saying, here's all the things I've done. Woohoo, look at me. I'm just, my parents beat humility into me way too much for me to be able to do that. But I've done a lot in the county to help people. We built a house for a couple. They were living them and their four kids were living in a 10 by 10 shed. And one of the local, I think it was Cal turned us on to it, that they were, the husband was bipolar, wasn't on his medication. He lost his job. There were a lot of bad things happened. And they were stuck in this 10 by 10 well house coming into winter. They built kind of the shell for a pole barn building. They were going to make a home, but it just came to a screeching halt. And so I was able to go around town and get people to donate stuff, get people to volunteer to help. I do AutoCAD drawings, so I basically did a complete house plan for them.
Nice.
And we got their house built before
That's
Christmas
awesome.
So they'd get in. And then we got our church. I got a bunch of people to donate presents for the kids. And that's the way it's supposed to work.
Yes.
It's one of the great things about Bonner County to me. When we first moved here, we saw that kind of outpouring from the public. We saw the way, no matter who it was, who you knew, if you were in trouble, the community came together, and that's what I loved about the county.
Yeah. Well, and that's what you don't see in big cities.
Oh, without a doubt.
Hardly anybody knows their neighbor
nope.
or knows what's going on with anybody in the city.
No, nope, without a doubt.
So community, building community and living somewhere like this where everybody actually cares about each other
yep.
has been really awesome. Again, being in the military, moving around, we've seen a lot of different
places. Oh, I bet, yeah.
Just haven't really experienced anything like we have here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is awesome.
We love it here.
What are a couple of the most important local issues that concern
you? Top of my list, well, I can't even put these in order of priority because they all kind of share equal level, but lands issues are important. We need to get control of the federal lands.
Okay.
In fact, I've been talking to George Wentz, who has created the constitutional argument to get Idaho's lands back, along with the other western states.
I'm about ready to cheer.
it puts us on an unfair footing with the rest of the states.
Mm-hmm.
This would put you kind of in the coalition of the western states.
Without a doubt. Okay. Without a doubt. I'm fully behind that.
Okay.
And there's also a place for commissioners. There are two laws with regards to federal lands that have a clause written into them where the federal government actually has to solicit local involvement. And you get an equal footing at the table
okay.
with the feds. And that's something I'm also very interested in. I don't think the commissioners have really been exercising that. So that's something I'm going to really push for is, listen, I want our spot at the table because if there is something going on with federal lands right now that the feds still run, we want to be involved in that outcome.
Right.
I think there's a lot of things that can be done in this county and changed just by having access to the resources, have them properly managed. School districts, the local school district wants to run a $55 million levy. We wouldn't have to have that. They would be funded properly. The roads would be funded properly.
Right.
You wouldn't have to keep hitting the taxpayers on it because we would properly utilize these resources. The other side of it is the property we're on, my in-law's property, 560 acres, is we have our own timber manager, and he manages the timber. You look at our woods, they are pristine. No undergrowth, no dead wood laying around. I mean, we've got piles of logs laying around, but you don't see the disease. You go up on federal lands, and it's just disgusting. I mean, right. It's absolutely disgusting. And look at the fires from last year. You can attribute almost all that to poor management.
Right. So I know vaguely the percentage, but I know it's a really high percentage in Idaho that's owned by the federal government.
About 64%.
Yeah. I mean, that's huge.
Oh, yeah. And the detractors say, well, you know, if Idaho gets the land, they're going to sell it off. Idaho owns 2 million, what is it, 2 million acres of land right now, and they're not selling that land off.
Right.
But what they do is they actually manage the land properly. They make about, for every dollar spent on public lands for the state of Idaho, they make $14.71. The feds lose about 30 cents for every dollar they...
Well, we have this
anything
great,
the federal government
yeah,
does.
We have this great renewable resource in our, mm-hmm. in our forest land, yeah. and it properly managed, it's profitable and it's good.
Right. So the other issue is property rights. The commissioners are making some really good moves right now. There needs to be more. The comprehensive plan that was put together years ago, I think, was... I talked to a guy that was in the group. There were 3 conservatives, and there were 27 environmentalists on this group mm-hmm. that wrote the comprehensive plan. And that's why you've seen so many restrictions on what you can do on your own property. The commissioners have started to make changes on that, and they've gotten a little bit of pushback, but they're holding tight, which I think is great. We're going to continue to advance that.
Okay.
And then I'm also really concerned about the local economy. The numbers have changed a little bit, but a few months ago, we were at 7.1% unemployment in Bonner County. The rest of the state was at 4.2%. Now, that goes back to planning and zoning, restricting any kind of growth, any kind of movement, any kind of development. And I'm not a big fan. I don't want to turn this into, you know, a big shopping mall.
Right.
And I think smart development is good. But when you impede that growth, it affects everybody in the county.
Right.
And so that goes back to the lands issue as well.
Yeah. Okay. So how about the Second Amendment?
Oh, I guns scare me. No, I'm just kidding.
So
you should listen to my radio show because Bob and I talk about guns. And Bob's my liberal opponent. It seems like every other week, and he's a hoplophobe. He's afraid of guns.
Really?
He was a Marine, and he's afraid of guns.
What?
I know. I know. I'm baffled. I am baffled every time we talk about this. Huge Second Amendment fan. I own a lot of guns. I always have. I learned to hunt when I was 12. My grandfather taught me how to hunt, and I believe in gun rights are supreme. I don't think the Second Amendment was written as a suggestion.
Right. Well, and how about, because I know right now, I'm not sure it hasn't passed yet, about
permitless carry.
Yeah, I'm all for it. In fact, I spoke at the permitless carry rally in Coeur d'Alene for Sheriff Wheeler.
Okay.
Sheriff Wheeler asked me to go ahead and speak for him. That was last year. And I think it's ridiculous. I think the Second Amendment is there. I do have a concealed carry permit, and I carry normally, I just think it's ridiculous that we have to ask permission to exercise our rights.
I know.
It's not even a right that it's given to us by government.
Exactly.
You know, it's my daughter, who's 19, she's not 21, so she can't protect herself yet.
Right.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
Well, and some of the other gyrations, too, where some of these states like California, we're going to limit it to a 10-round magazine. Okay, great. So the first 10 people that get shot are okay. It's that 11th person
that's really
that's important.
Really matters.
That's the one we want to worry about.
I
think the issue around guns, and I say this every time we talk about it, is that they keep focusing on the tool. They need to focus on the person that chooses to use the tool.
Yeah.
Of course. It really comes down to a fundamental difference in how people look at human nature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really is. You know, whereas the liberal is generally speaking going to say, well, if we just make the environment correct, you know, if we take away all the bad stuff,
then human. It's part of the central planning fallacy. Is that, you know, central planners always think that people are going to behave a certain way. They have these little categories, and these people fit neatly in these categories, and people don't fit in categories.
No.
Even in my lifespan, I've never fit in a category, and that's why central planners always fail. But yet they keep planning. So.
Right.
Yeah. Because they think, well, I'll just change a little bit how they did that, and it'll work better this time. Mm-hmm. It's the Republican Party, too. You know, we can do it. We'll do it better.
Do it better.
Right.
And we'll spend that money better.
It's always going to be done better. All right. How about the refugee resettlement? I know that was an issue in Sandpoint, and it's been an issue in different places.
I spoke at the city council meeting.
Okay.
Spoke out against it. There was actually there were quite a few people that came out and spoke in opposition to it. In fact, an overwhelming majority of the people spoke in opposition.
Yeah.
So I tried not to repeat anything that anyone else had said before me. But the reality is that, first of all, Sandpoint can't bring people in. But what I really objected to was the fact that they thought it was a good idea.
Right.
A number of issues. Just the economics of it. Okay, so if you're going to bring these people in, they're going to need jobs. They're going to take jobs away from people that already live here.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to house them. There's the issue of security. We know that our government does not do a good job at vetting. They keep proving it over and over again.
Yeah.
So, and again, I'm all for helping people. I took a little bit different tact than most people did. I said, okay, let's look at this from a compassion side, because I'm a compassionate person. If you are really compassionate, we can help anywhere from 12 to 20 more of them if we keep them over in that area, somewhere close to where their home is, than bringing one here.
Right.
So if you're compassionate, we do a much better job doing it that way. And those are the UN's numbers. Those aren't numbers that I pulled out of the clear blue sky. I did a lot of research on this. Not only that, most of these people want to go back home. Once all this is over, they, you know, and it's just so much hubris, and most of it comes from the left, that we can do a better job if we just bring them here. We can save, we can solve all the world's problems if we just bring everyone here.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of them have said they don't want to assimilate.
Right.
They don't want to be part of an American culture. So it is better to keep them in their home.
Well, and bringing them here is trying to shoehorn them into a place that they don't speak the language. They don't. They have a very dissimilar culture.
Right.
They don't have the religious freedom. They've not been raised with it as we have.
And I would even say that they're culture is incompatible.
Without a doubt. It's very incompatible with the Constitution. Anything that's Sharia-based, or even what I refer to as Sharia light, because you have some Muslims that are, oh yeah, I'm Muslim, but I'm kind of a lightweight Muslim.
Yeah.
The problem I have is the moderate Muslims, whenever they get a strong radical Muslim leadership, always tend to migrate towards that.
Sure.
And people do in general. People tend to migrate towards power, which is unfortunate. But it never ends well. And you can look at Dearborn, Michigan. You can look at a lot of these different states that have big populations. And they come in, they take over. They run everyone else out. They try to institute Sharia. You know, it's never a happy ending.
Right.
But Dan, obviously you hate children.
Yeah, of course I do. Yes. I hate children. Children have always been one of my passions. I was a youth leader at a church. My wife and I were my coach kids sports. I love children. I love children of all shapes and sizes. And if you really want to help the kids of refugees, then we take them over there.
Yeah, we totally agree.
Similar culture. I mean, it's just so ridiculous to think that, let's bring them over here. They don't speak the language. Over there, similar culture, similar religion, similar geography. Mm-hmm. It just makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people say, but Dan, they need the gospel, right? And a criminal gang needs the gospel, too, but we don't invite them into our house.
Right. No kidding.
Okay, property taxes. Now, we've already touched a little bit on property rights mm-hmm. and things like that. So, and talked about taxes, but what is there anything that you're going to actively be working on specifically in reference to property taxes?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, property taxes need to come down. They haven't.
Agreed.
In Bonner County. And if you talk to the current commissioners, I listened to one of their presentations about it. They said, well, we haven't changed the levy rate. The levy rates remain the same. The levy rate means nothing. It's the budget that drives the levy rate, which drives the dollar value. Mm-hmm. So what we need to do is we need to reduce the budget. Now, how do you do that? How do you reduce taxes overall? There's two ways to do it. Actually, there's three ways to do it. One, you can just flat out cut taxes. Mm-hmm. And you can do that through efficiency, through eliminating the services. The problem is there's not a lot of services that the county does that can easily be eliminated. Mm-hmm. Okay, but they can be made more efficient. And there's some things, like we have three different mechanic shops in the county, and Bonner County EMS can't get their vehicles worked on any one of the three. Why we have three, I don't know. Why do the sheriffs buy Chevy Tahoes and Bonner County EMS buys Ford Explorers? Why aren't they doing fleet buying?
Right.
A lot of money can be saved there. So let's collapse the mechanic shops into one, where all the vehicles get worked on. And I know this is kind of rudimentary, but these are the little things that can be done to make things more efficient. Attitude change is going to need to happen too with some of the groups, and I'm not going to name them. actually, I will. Road and Bridge. Road and Bridge needs an attitude adjustment. Mm-hmm. They think that the public's there to serve them, and in reality, they're there to serve the public. So that needs to change. So you have that. We can see a little bit of savings there. The second one is to grow the base. And again, this is where planning and zoning has created a problem. There's a house up at Schweitzer that a guy came in, wanted to build this $2.8 million home. He was well within all the parameters of what P&Z and Road and Bridge wanted, and yet they said, nope, we're going to deny your permit because we denied other permits just like yours. The builder, who I know, said, well, let's fight it. We have legal standing. We can win this. And the guy says, no. He goes, I didn't come here to hire lawyers. I came to build a house. I'll just go build a house in Montana. So not only do we lose the work for that construction crew for the entire year and the $2.8 million that would have come into the community, but we also lost in perpetuity the tax that comes from that, the property tax. So if we can actually expand, start looking for businesses that are compatible with Bonner County, and allow some actual growth, we can see property taxes come down just by growing the base. And then overall, it's just keeping an eye on spending. I mean, I was sitting in one of the commissioners' meetings, and one of the departments had an extra $20,000 that left over. Oh, we need to find some projects to do with this. No,
spend it.
No. Let's give it back to the people.
Right.
Let's show some actual cuts. So there's a bit of a mindset that needs to be changed there, and it's not difficult to make those kind of changes once you start showing the benefit to those changes.
Well, see, with that extra $20,000, though, I'm sure in their mind they were thinking, well, we should spend this because if we don't spend it the next year,
right.
they'll say, well, hey, you got by with that much last year.
It's the baseline budgeting right. conundrum, and we need to go to zero-based budget.
Yes.
Right.
Zero-based, even if we had to do it where we told every department, okay, come to us with your budgets for the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes, especially when you switch from to zero-based budgeting, the learning curve is a little bit tough because they have to actually be honest and say, okay, this is exactly what we need.
Right.
So there's that, this is what we need, this is what we want,
right.
and this is what we'd really like to have. These are the toys. And it's difficult to get that change made. So I would almost say, listen, let's do this. Give me 2 years worth, but let's really pour through these budgets to make sure they're right to start with.
Yeah.
And that will also, I think you'll also see some savings there because that mentality of if we don't spend it this year, I do a lot of work with the feds.
Yeah.
If we don't spend it this year, we're not going to get it next year is prevalent. And really what it should be is that this is what we need to operate.
Right. Well, if we all, like, we ran government, like, we have to run our household.
Yeah, no kidding.
It would be down to the penny. It'd be like, okay, this is how much we need. This is how much we're going to spend. We wouldn't just go, well, whatever. You know, we can always spend more. It's like, no, we don't do that.
Well, and even when it comes to spending, there's a couple of different types of spending. Salaries, you got to pay salaries. Okay, so that's a hard cost. And then there's projects that they're spending that can actually be an investment. So there is some money that can be spent that can actually create more money, create more revenue for the county and create some better things. And then there's the other ones that are just, yeah, we have this money. Let's build another park.
Right.
You know, we need to pave the roads, but let's build a park or let's build a bike trail.
Yeah.
The bike trail thing drives me nuts. Those should all be privately funded. I mean, that's just ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, that's part of the problems with the highway department at the Fed level is that you look at where their spending has gone. They've been building museums and bike paths.
Right.
Yet the bridges are crumbling, the roads are crumbling, the infrastructure is crumbling. But let's get that museum up.
Yeah. They can't get there because the road's such a mess. But
right.
by golly, we have a museum.
Right.
And most of this is common sense. And I don't know what happens to people when they run for office, when they get into office. And hopefully this doesn't happen to me. And I'm going to count on you guys to call me and say, Dan, what's wrong with you if I do some special business? But they get in office and suddenly it becomes this kingdom. And we're going to make everyone happy by spending money. And one of the things my wife will tell you that I'm famous about is that I don't have a problem having the hard conversation.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, we can't afford this.
Yeah.
This isn't right. It's not going to benefit everyone in the county. We can't afford it. We need to say next.
Well, and that's important.
Right.
I see that in Heather Scott too. It just she goes in and she knows what's right. She hasn't drank the Kool-Aid yet.
I don't think she will. Heather and I communicate a lot because I'm her big defender on the radio.
Yeah.
So whenever she does something, in fact, I call every week. Okay, what have you done this week that I need to defend you on?
I mean, it is.
It goes back to the starting point. So if you have and I know she does, and I know you do. Mm-hmm. Basically, a constitutional worldview is that you're going to see it through that lens, and it's like, well, even if I think that's a good idea. We're not doing that because that's not the role of government.
Yeah, because there's lots of great ideas out there.
Sure.
But the bottom line is understand government's role in our lives. Yeah, it's not your daddy.
Right.
It's not your generous grandpa or generous uncle or grandmother or aunt. But it's to run basic services and look out for the well-being of the people. Let the people make their own decisions. A good example was the change of the building size for site permits. It used to be anything over 400 square foot, you had to have a building site permit. The commissioners raised it to 1,000.
Okay.
Yeah, which is great. Because I had a lady call on the radio show and say, listen, oh, it's going to cause all this mayhem. And what if people build like the Panhandle Health? What if they build over a septic system or over leach lines or a secondary leach line location? That's the owner's issue.
Right.
They've received a document that says, here are the guidelines.
Dangerous freedom.
Yeah. Live within these guidelines and be responsible for those guidelines. And that's the thing is that you see the left and some of the GOP establishment, they want that big nanny state.
Right.
They want to be able to tell us what to do because they don't trust us.
Right. Well, exactly. They don't believe in the self-government. I mean,
right.
I see that in even the cottage food laws in Idaho, which really bother me.
Yeah.
But, you know, saying the consumer is not intelligent enough. They have not done their homework. We must protect that.
Right, and they need to come to my house or your house because we can educate them. Quite frankly, I'm intelligent enough to handle my own affairs.
Yes, and it should actually be something done between each other.
And if I don't, then I have enough integrity to be accountable for what I've done.
Right,
and if you and I decide amongst ourselves that, hey, you want to buy a chicken for me, we should be able to do that.
Well, yeah. I mean, what happened to the days that, listen, I grew some apples. And I want to sell you apples, and you want to buy the apples, done. Right. No, now it's, well, wait a minute, we have to get the FDA in here, and then we have, you know, and did you have a permit for that?
Right, it gets ridiculous.
You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah. Now, even the state, the great state of Idaho, one of the most conservative states in the union, has its problems.
Oh, yeah.
What are the main problems? Hold up, why is Boise kowtowing to the feds all the time?
They get hooked. It's like crack. They get hooked on the federal money.
Yeah.
The problem is every time you take something from the feds, there's always something that tags. It's like a computer virus. It's something tags along with it. So you take that dollar from the Fed, and the feds go, okay, great. You've taken this dollar. By the way, we also get to control this aspect of your state.
Yeah.
For taking that dollar. Now, every now and then, you can find these intangible dollars that don't actually tie to anything, which, by the way, is our money to begin with.
Right.
They're not giving us their money. They're giving us our money back.
Right.
But you can find those programs, but they're few and far between. Typically, there's always a hook. Mm-hmm. And especially under the Obama administration, everything's got a hook to it. But they get stuck on going, hey, listen, we want all this fun stuff over here, and it's going to make my constituents vote for me again if I get this money and put together this program, so therefore I'm getting the money, the heck with everything else.
Gotcha.
Okay, so I'm going to bring public education into this whole conversation because I'm a homeschooler and I'm passionate about...
You're one of those crazy homeschooler
people. ...issues with public school.
I know. Hopefully somebody's watching you.
you know, with Common Core and with a federalized education, what can people do in Idaho or even in Bonner County to try and keep the federal government out of our schools and keep the conservative, you know, I'm not big on public schools anyway. Mm-hmm. I think it's taking taxes and sticking it again instead of leaving it to community. But the importance of educating the kids in true constitution rather than turning around and feeding them social studies that has been completely milled through a liberal viewpoint.
Yeah.
What can we do? And are the schools in Bonner County any different?
Well, they're... First, let me tell you, full disclosure, my wife works for the school district.
Okay.
She's a special ed parapro. She's worked for them since we moved here full time. But she's also aware that one size does not fit all. Mm. With our kids coming up through this school district, and it's actually a pretty decent school district when you start looking at the a lot of the outcomes. I mean, they're doing well testing-wise. Of course, then you start looking at the tests and going, you know, what are they testing for? Anyway, and I don't want to go down that rabbit hole because I could do probably 3 hours on that. But public schools have a place. They just do. There's certain people that are going to function fine in a public school. Our oldest son did not function fine in a public school, and it was like pulling teeth to get him through to graduation. He works for me. He's extremely intelligent, very creative, doesn't learn like other kids learn.
Right.
I sat in on a homeschooling program that First Christian Church, once a week does a deal where they come together and do kind of reviews. Yeah, it's a co-op. And I was extremely impressed. In fact, I sat in one of the math classes, and I used to be really extremely good at math. Math and history are my subjects. And I was put to shame. I didn't want to answer. I was hoping they weren't going to ask me any questions because I'm watching these kids. I'm going, wow. I mean, this is amazing. And it goes to show you that, yeah, that one-size-fits-all thing doesn't work. Now, when it comes to public schools specifically, I think that the feds need to get out of it. Mm-hmm. Again, it goes back to central planning. Central planning doesn't work. It never has worked. There's examples in history of how central planning fails over and over and over again.
Right.
And to Common Core's point, it's really more of indoctrination than anything else.
Yeah.
Even though Common Core really represents two things. There's the standards, and then there's the curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
I wish the federal government would get out of it. I wish we could do away with the federal Department of Education. We don't need it. We have those in each state.
Yeah.
And it should be, and going back to my overarching theme about everything, it should start local and should go up from the bottom, not down from the top. So Bonner County should have the ability to decide, okay, here's the curriculum we want. Here's how we're going to teach. We're also going to open up the avenues for other forms of teaching. And actually, the school district is doing that. They've got a couple of, I can't remember what the name of the program is, but it's one of them's in Farmers Stidwell, where it's kind of the one-room schoolhouse where each kid learns each subject at its different level. So they might be on fourth grade English, but on first grade math.
Right.
So they get to learn at that level.
Yeah.
And I think that's good. And this is something that's, I think, been born out of competition. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big fan of competition.
Sure.
I think the money from the state and their and our legislators are working on that. They're trying to get this bill through, and I know they're tuning the language up where the money follows the kids, and they're having to do it in baby steps. They had to strike a bit of language that spoke to money not going to religious schools, which was on the books in Idaho for quite a few years. So they're trying to get that done away with, and once they get that done away with, then it can open the door to the money follows the kids. And I think that's the key to everything when it comes to education. That way the parent gets to say, listen, I want to take my kid to the Lutheran school or the Seventh-day Adventist school, or I want to homeschool, and that money goes with them. Because right now, if you don't participate in the school system, mm-hmm. you're still paying taxes into it.
Yeah.
And I think that's an unfair burden. Yeah. But yeah, I'm a big fan of, listen, teach the kid where they're at. Each kid learns differently.
Yeah, because to me, the federal government actually takes away any options that parents have or that teachers have or any local school district has to make decisions. Because again, it's the relying on the money, that federal funding coming in, and they don't want to lose that. And I think if they pulled out, it would create options and creativity, and parents would be more involved in saying, this is what I want my child to learn, and this is where I want them to go. Yep. And the schools will be held accountable on a local level, which is always better.
You know, I'm all for paying teachers more money, but I like merit pay.
Yeah.
And people go, it's impossible to measure. No, it's not. Each kid is an individual. You test them when they start school. Maybe give them a couple of weeks to get tuned in. Test them when they start school. Test them at mid-year. Test them at the end. If they've advanced,
then
you pay the teacher a bonus.
Right. Not based on where – this is where we – see, all my kids are at different levels at different times. I have two that graduated at 15, one that graduated at 16. Well, but if I had taught exactly, you know, at every subject at the precise time that they tell me that I'm supposed to do,
what's their age?
Right.
Yeah, then they would have had to push all the way through to 18. And for me, I'm like, well, yeah, they're just moving along, and you test them where they're at. Not, and they all did the same thing as you're talking about. They pushed through math really, really fast, and then progressed in English a little slower, or in, you know, other.
See, and this is that central planning box.
Yeah.
The box says, this is what you learn in first grade, this is what you learn in second grade, this is what you learn in third grade. My youngest son, when he was in first grade, was reading, and he was reading at a fourth grade level. Mm-hmm. And they would have to sit him out in the hallway because he was reading books that the other kids in the class couldn't read. And, of course, they didn't want the other kids to feel bad.
Feel bad, right?
But eventually it worked out well because they dumbed him down enough to where he got to grade point level. So.
Oh, perfect. Which perfect.
That's not a good thing.
Yeah, it's really not. And honestly, I thought about it through the years, and I thought, wow, if I tested our kids where they say they're supposed to be, like I skipped American history this year, and we started out in ancient history. Well, he would take an American history test, and they'd say, oh, he just doesn't know anything. He's not where he's supposed to be in third grade. Well, but have you talked to him and see, like, does he know Greek and Latin? And has he learned all the ancient stuff that you're never probably going to learn all the way through school? That doesn't matter. You're supposed to know this amount of American history. And so I just think about the testing as not being a very good thing for
children. No, I agree. And kids learn differently. Mm-hmm. Kids have different disciplines. They have different interests. They have different abilities.
Yes.
If you're trying to shove a kid who may be an engineer through an art class, he's going to have a hard time. You know, he wants to draw straight lines. And it's like, oh, there's no rules, you know.
Right.
Paint your
art
soul.
Art is whatever.
Yeah. Paint your soul. What does your soul feel right now? Yeah,
that.
It's just, yeah. And I'm more analytical when it comes to things like that. So I do great in the, okay, yeah. Oh, you want me to draw this building and it's got four octagons and they print. Okay, awesome. I got that down.
Right.
Oh, you want me to freehand draw something? Good luck.
That's how our oldest son was too. He would draw stick figures, and yet he plays piano beautifully.
Yeah.
So art expresses itself differently in different people.
Oh yeah.
And music is very mathematical. It's very logical.
And see, that's why I'm a musician, so that it kind of fits. But then I've also got this creative side, so I'm kind of a conundrum. So just, if you don't believe me, ask my wife.
You're all over the place.
He's kind of all over the board. So.
Gotcha.
Well, that's good.
Well, you know, appreciate you taking your time.
Yeah, this is fun.
Today. And we're big advocates of local, and specifically getting involved with local elections.
I think that's important. When you look at the number of people in the county that vote, it's sad and pathetic.
Yeah.
And if you're listening to this and you're one of those people who say, you know, I don't want to vote because it doesn't make a difference, this is where it makes a difference.
Yeah.
Yes.
It makes a difference in our county right now.
Yeah.
Because if you get the right people in, they can create that kind of government that's big enough to handle the services that need to be done, but not so big that it stands in the way of the individual.
That's a good way to put it. How can people get in touch with you, get hold of you, learn
more? If you're a Facebooker, you can get on Facebook. There's a I've got a Facebook site. It's Dan McDonald. Dan McDonald for Commissioner, I think is what it's called. If you look up Dan McDonald, you'll find it.
Okay.
Then I also have a website that is just danmcdonald.net. Okay. Dan McDonald's run together, lowercase.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'll give you my email address. I'm using my personal email address. I didn't set up a campaign one because I don't need one more email. It's the letters DMCD838364, which is zip code,
okay.
At gmail.com.
Okay.
One more time on email.
It's DMCD838364. At gmail.com.
Okay, and then you also have a radio show.
Yep. If you want to listen, if you want to hear me on the radio on Fridays on 1400 AM or 1450, depending on where you are in the county, we start at about 1210 actually and go to about 1 o'clock. It's a debate format, and we have callers. So you can call in. We open the phone lines at 1230. You can call in and participate in the show, and that's always fun. I like having callers.
Nice.
Okay.
Nice.
Well, once again, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thanks for having
me.
Thank you. Our verse for today comes from Psalm 56 and verse 4. In God, whose word I praise, in God I trust. I shall not be afraid. What can flesh do to me? And our shout out for today goes to Jeremiah in Alaska. Thanks for listening.